Paul Green, WGN political analyst and chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Today we had Kim Fox, who is running for state's attorney in a very heated primary. She was introduced by County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, who ended the introduction by saying, "The best chief of staff I ever had."
I want you to know that I've had a number of chiefs of staff in the last 4.5 years, and Kim Fox is the very best. Please welcome her.
The end. And Kurt Summers is out of town. But I will be sure to let him know. Good morning. It is truly an honor and a pleasure and a privilege to be here at the City Club as a speaker. I have sat in audience many times and enjoyed cannoli and wanted to put my card in the fishbowl to get a membership, so I've earned it now. And so I'm honored to be here. I'm going to talk today about not just the race for Cook County State's Attorney, because it is an incredibly pivotal race here in Cook County. As we all know, the world is watching. And in the conversations about our criminal justice system here in Cook County, we continue to miss a really fundamental piece of what's happening here, and it's the piece surrounding juvenile justice. We talk about what's happened with Tyquan Lee, or Laquan McDonald, or Antonio LeGreer. And they all have one thing in common that we never really talk about, and that's the fact that they've all had contact with the Cook County juvenile justice system. And as someone who has dedicated her career to the issues related to racial, social, criminal, and juvenile justice, I cannot emphasize enough the importance that we place on taking care of our juvenile justice system. So, my career, as Tony said, has been dedicated to these issues. I've been out of law school since 1997, and I've worked at the county for some capacity since 1998. I was driven into a career of public service based largely on my own upbringing. A number of you have had an opportunity to see my first commercial, which was narrated by Kendall Fox, who is the little girl who did the prayer, which is why she's here. She didn't get any FaceTime, that's why she's here. And when we put that ad together, there was some pushback, because as a first-time candidate, certainly I felt that I knew what the message should be, and the consultants were telling me what types of ads, you know, state's attorneys should make. And I said, I need an ad that's reflective of me and my values and why I'm running for this race. And so when you look at the ad, it opens with a scene of a bathroom and a bathtub, and it has my lovely 9-year-old daughter's voice saying the Lord's Prayer. The reason that we chose to do that in the context for that story is that when I was a child growing up in Cabrini in the 70s and 80s, when gunshots would ring out and we couldn't tell the difference between gunshots and fireworks, my grandmother and my mother would usher us into the bathroom and tell us to lay down in the tub. Because the conventional wisdom was that bullets didn't pierce porcelain. And so I grew up with this ritual when the sounds would pop off of running to our bathroom, getting in the tub, and praying. And these were things that I did when I was in the 70s or in the 70s and 80s, and was a part of me that I had put on a shelf as I grew up and went off to law school and went into public service. And a couple years ago, my daughter Kendall and my oldest daughter Kai were at my mother's house, and she lived in Inglewood. And on New Year's Eve, I asked my mother to babysit for us, and that was one of the rare occasions she would actually let my husband and I have a night out on New Year's Eve. And the next day we went to pick the kids up, and I asked them about the time that they spent with Nana. And they said, "Oh, we had a good time. We had grape juice at midnight." And then Nana made us go in the bathroom and get in the tub. And my heart ached, because this experience, this ritual that I had endured as a child living in one of the most notorious housing projects in the country was being repeated in this generation on the South Side. And so for everything that I've endured the issues as it relates to violence in our communities continues to reign, and that there are children right now still seeking shelter in bathtubs. That is how I wanted to introduce myself to this campaign. That is how I'm introducing myself to you all, and why I've chosen a career around the issues of violence and criminal justice, and why, in particular, juvenile justice deserves the attention that it is. It deserves attention that it's not gotten. It is the most fundamental aspect of our criminal justice system that we pay the least amount of attention to. Let's talk about Tyshawn Lee. Oh, thank you, Graham. We tend in this county and in this country we have this belief that we talk about victims. When we talk about victims, we talk about them after the fact. When we talk about what happened to Tyshawn Lee and what happened to him and his community, it's only after there's been a chalk outline of a 9-year-old. I have a 9-year-old. We talk about the fact that there was a young boy who sat on a swing and was lured off that swing into an alley and executed in one of the most heinous and brutal crimes that has ever rocked this city. And we mourn Tyshawn, and we ask, who are the children that live in these communities? And then we move on, and we etch his name on our sweatshirts, and we say, rest in peace on Facebook, and we move on. But this conversation has to be framed in the context of what happened on the next day when the fourth graders in Tyshawn Lee's class had to go to class and sit next to that empty chair. Fourth graders who had to go with the realization and the notion that one of their own had been killed in such a horrific fashion, who have to sit with that empty chair for the rest of the school year and the trauma that's ensued. And we know that that's real because my fourth grader, who lives many miles away, happened to catch the story on the news in passing and could not sleep that night and asked me for many nights, could that be me? And I had the ability to talk to her and to calm her fears and deal with the trauma that she was dealing with. But the trauma that these children who live in these neighborhoods that have been wrecked by violence has gone unmet. And we've met their trauma not in the appropriate spaces, but in our criminal justice system. And we ought to do better. We know better. Cook County is the home of the first juvenile court in the country, actually in the world. In 1899, we established the first juvenile court here in Cook County because there was the realization that children were different. There was a realization that they engaged in behaviors that, you know, while upsetting and disturbing and delinquent, were children, and that they ought to be treated separate and apart from adults. And as time evolved, the model here in Cook County spread throughout the country rather quickly. Within 30 years, every state had a juvenile court after Cook County established the first one here. But what we haven't done is given it the attention necessary to deal with the issues that affect the kids that come through our systems. Let's talk about Laquan McDonald. There's been a lot of conversation about Laquan McDonald and the end of his life. There's been a lot of conversation about the 400 days between his murder and the charging. And just recently, there's been conversation about his life and the 17 years that he lived prior to his tragic and untimely death. The fact that Laquan McDonald, too, had come part of our foster care system at an early age. Our juvenile court, not only do we deal with issues around delinquency, we also have a child protection division, a rather large division, a division that deals with children who have been abused, neglected, and seen some of the most horrific violence perpetrated on them by their family members or people in their neighborhoods. And it's a system that's run by the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, and we never talk about it. The Cook County State's Attorney reviews cases that come from the Department of Children and Family Services to determine whether or not a child is going to enter into our foster care system or remain in the care and custody of their parents. there's been a lot of conversation in the last couple of weeks about what it means to handle tough cases, what it means to have what it takes to be able to take on big leadership because you have to handle tough cases. Imagine having to make the decision whether or not to take a child from a parent and put them in foster care. Imagine having to make the decision whether or not to take a child who's been in foster care and return them to a parent who suffered with drug addiction or mental health issues, who over time you had to watch and wait and hope and think and pray that they're going to cure the conditions that caused their child to be in that system in the first place. Because what we know about our child welfare system, not just here in Cook County, but across the country, is that children who enter our child welfare system, what we're doing, what we say in the best interest of them, most of them come out worse for the wear. Most of the children who come through our criminal justice system have had some contact at some point with our child welfare system. And here in Cook County, we have lawyers in the state's attorney's office every day making the tough calls about whether to deprive a parent or deprive a child of their family. We're making those calls every day. What happened with Laquan McDonald? He entered our foster care system at the age of 5. He suffered sexual abuse while in our foster care system. He went to schools that were some of the most underfunded and worst schools that we have in the city of Chicago. It's important for us to talk about these issues related to juvenile justice, not just in the context of crime and punishment and child welfare, but in the context of mental health and public health and drug addiction and education and the economy and poverty. Because there are risk factors that we know of the type of children who enter into our child welfare system, who eventually enter our juvenile delinquency system, and who eventually lead down the pipeline to our adult criminal justice system. The Department of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, they call them risk factors. And the risk factors of the children who enter our systems read like my life. They're children who come from single-parent homes. They're children who live in areas of high concentrations of poverty. They're children who have been victimized by some form of traumatic abuse, whether sexual or physical. They're children who have schools in their neighborhoods that are underfunded and under-resourced. They're schools or they're children who live in neighborhoods that have divestment of economic development. These are the children who are coming into our child welfare system, and it's our responsibility to once we have them to make sure that they come out thriving citizens. These are the tough cases that people deal with every day. Laquan McDonald came out of our child welfare system and into our juvenile delinquency system like so many of our children do. At 1100 South Hamilton or 2245 West Ogden, it's all the same building. When I was growing up, it was the Audi home, and my mother would threaten me every time I did something. And that was the old building. You're going to go to the Audi home. When I finally started to work at the Audi home, I literally like was looking around for the ghost of my mother's past. In that building that we've all driven by and heard stories of are the everyday decisions that are being made about our children. On one half of the building is our Child Protection Division. Whereas Tony said, I served as a guardian ad litem for 3 years, as a direct in-court advocate for children who had been in our foster care system, advocating for their special needs, their mental health issues, whether they had an individualized education plan, whether they had shoes, whether their foster parents were spending their money on their needs or for their own issues. And on the other side of the exact same building, so there's one side where we love them, we nurture them, we know that they're in that predicament not because of anything that they've done, but the environment that they were born into, that a parent had a drug addiction or a mental health issue, and we want to be able to change their outcomes because they had nothing to do with why they were there. They were born into that circumstance. If you go 100 feet in the same building, you have our juvenile delinquency division that charges them with crimes and that for many of them set them on a path to our adult criminal justice system, and it's a path of no return. and that every day there are hardworking state's attorneys who are reconciling what we're doing in a juvenile justice system that, again, nobody pays attention to until after the fact, until the postmortem, when we try to trace back where we were in the lives of the children whose chalk outlines we're now beginning to memorize. These are the tough cases. My frustration in the last several years, really, around juvenile justice is the minimization of what's happening to our children. It's using buzzwords like the school-to-prison pipeline and really not doing anything about the pipeline. It's about knowing that it's not just in schools, it's in our child welfare, it's preschool, that we can identify who the kids are that are going to matriculate through our criminal justice system. And that when we talk about the pipeline, all of our efforts, energy, and resources are waiting for the gush that comes out at 26 in California. That's where the big cases are, if they make it. Our current state's attorney has not paid attention to juvenile justice issues in a way that has made us an effective advocate on behalf of not just these children, but the communities for whom they come. I tell people, and people are very surprised, that when I was an assistant state's attorney and when I was a supervisor in the state's attorney's number or state's attorney's office, how we had to log the convictions of the children that we were prosecuting. Because this state's attorney was concerned about convictions over what was happening in the lives of these children. People are often very surprised to know that it is a felony for children to fight on the school grounds. It's a felony for children to fight on the school grounds. I'm going to go back for a minute. I used to fight on school grounds at 3 o'clock. 3:15. If they showed up. I always showed up. Make it be clear, Kim Fox does not run from a fight. Make it clear. But can you imagine what happens when you arrest children for fighting on the school grounds? We're doing it every single day here in Cook County. Every day, we are arresting children. And I need not tell you where these children are coming from, but I will. Because we need to be clear and we need to be frank. 94% of the kids in our criminal justice system, our juvenile justice system, 94% are African American and Latino. These are children who are going to some of the worst funded schools in the city of Chicago. These are kids who are going to school where mental health services have been cut, special education has been cut, where teachers are dealing with some of the most profound issues of the day and do not have the resources to deal with kids who are engaging in delinquent behavior. And so we have been accustomed to picking up the phone and calling the police on these children. And it is the state's attorney's office responsibility to say, our juvenile justice system is not where we deal with school disciplinary issues. We haven't been doing that. Our current state's attorney says if you bring it in, you look at the case, you determine whether or not you've got sufficient facts to file. Maybe if they've not gotten in trouble before, you can send them to diversion. But there are far too many children who are dealing with the fact that some as young as 12, are getting fingerprinted, mugshot, and a CR number that they will carry with them for the rest of their days in the city of Chicago, County of Cook. And for a moment, think about what it's like for a child to be placed in a police car outside of their school and brought to a detention center for juvenile behavior. This is what we're doing in Cook County. That child who is now entangled in our criminal justice system, the data is clear and unequivocal. The younger and the further that these kids enter into our juvenile justice system, the greater the likelihood that they end up in our adult system. And they don't end up there just by happenstance. In their wake are victims in their wake communities that are falling apart. There is an old saying, this is the Maasai tribe, where they ask when they see each other, warriors, how are the children? And how are the children? It's one of the first questions that they ask because they believe as a village that you are only as good as the children in your village. In Cook County, in our juvenile justice system, when we're talking about our priorities, when was the last time we asked about our children? Before they passed away. There's also a saying from Frederick Douglass, which is one of my favorite, and you'll hear me say it over and over again for people who have watched me speak on this issue, that it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. State's Attorney Alvarez has specialized in us repairing broken men instead of building strong children. That we can talk about our criminal justice system in ways that make us at the forefront of transformation as it comes to our youth. Because if we simply wait for people to enter our adult court systems to care about them, we have lost the battle. Of the 500 people who were killed in Chicago last year, 246 of them were under the age of 24. Almost half. Of the ages of the people who engaged in that behavior, they're under the age of 24. We have the studies that have come out that said kids between the age of 18 and 24, young people, African-American males in the city of Chicago, 47% of them, 47% are disconnected, not in school, and not working. And the recipe for that is that these are the young people who are going to end up in our criminal justice system. And the readily available access to guns in these same neighborhoods. I saw firsthand when we talk about the tough cases, the 12-year-olds who are arrested with guns. Because in their neighborhoods, to not have a gun means that you are not safe. And yet in Cook County, we've not spent any of our efforts making sure not just that 12-year-olds don't possess guns, but going after the type of people who would put a gun in a 12-year-old's hand. Three people were arrested last year for straw purchasing in Chicago. Three. One, two, three. We've not gone after gun trafficking. We've not gone after those who prey on what's happening in these young people's communities and preying on them and escalating into the violence. We simply wait for after the fact. And so I am committed to issues related to juvenile justice. I've committed my career to the issues related to juvenile justice because I have always felt unbelievably privileged to have had as many risk factors that I had, to have endured the things that I have endured, and that the inevitability that I would end up in the criminal justice system was high. But again, just not as the state's attorney. But I'll take it. Because it's time that we stop having false conversations about what it's going to take to fix our criminal justice system and really start having real conversations about dealing with it in our juvenile justice system and a holistic approach to our adult justice system. That we have to now start talking about crime and violence in relationship to education. That we have to have a state's attorney that's willing to fight and advocate for education funding for our most vulnerable schools who use our criminal justice system as a crutch. That we have to start fighting for, and you have to have a state's attorney that fights for and believes in dealing with drug addiction as a public health crisis in a public health space and not in our jails. And that we have to have a state's attorney that's willing to stand up and say to the governor that when you cut mental health funding and services, you put our communities at risk. It's time to have a state's attorney that believes that every child in every neighborhood deserves the right to walk out their house and jump rope, skip hopscotch. Kids don't do that anymore. I'm so old. Hopscotch. Kendall's like, who? Hopscotch. Wash their dogs like any other child in any neighborhood. And that it is a given that we have to be tough on those who prey on our children and prey on our neighborhoods. But at the same time, we have to build our children and make sure that we, as the village of all of them, care about them in life in as much as we care about them in death, and make sure that our policies and our priorities match. Thank you.
I think they like it. Okay, we have time for questions. young Amanda is collecting cards for the... If you have questions, you could ask Amanda, too. All right, Suhail Khan. I'll get your name right one of these days. All right. What can the state's attorney's office do to stem the tide of loophole straw guns from northwest Indiana into our county?
So we can't do anything about the loopholes in northwest Indiana, but what we need to be doing is being more strategic and having a unit within the state's attorney's office that deals with trafficking. We are so reactionary in our approach to dealing with gun violence and dealing with guns after the fact. We have to establish real partnerships with the U.S. Attorney's Office, with the ATF, and have a strategy to go after those who manufacture or bring in guns illegally. There are, and it's a dirty little secret that's not a secret, there are freight trains that go through Inglewood every day that are transporting semi-automatic weapons. And once every couple of months, those freight trains are broken into and hundreds of guns are taken and sold. It's a real thing. We don't talk about it in Chicago because there's a fight over jurisdiction of how we monitor the rails. But we're not chasing the guns. And so we haven't had a real strategic effort to deal with straw purchasing here in Chicago and Cook County. We haven't had a targeted response within the state's attorney's office to deal with nothing else but dealing with guns. I mean, with the rate of gun violence that we have in the city of Chicago, it's appalling that we do not have a targeted task force within the state's attorney's office to deal with that.
Okay. We have a question from Robert Harris. Where are you, Robert?
My old boss.
Ah.
A phantom Robert here.
Cowards die many times before their death. The valiant taste death but once, if you're a little Shakespeare for some of you, but okay. Thank you, Madam President. Wait till you hear the question. Your opponents cite lack of experience as a reason not to vote for you. Specifically, felony jury trials, appellate court arguments, Supreme Court, trial advocacy, teaching, etc. How do you respond?
The current state's attorney has been a state's attorney for 29 years and has tried many trials. It is not her trial experience that has failed us, it's her judgment. You need a state's attorney that has... You need a state's attorney that is going to have good judgment and be a leader of an office of 850 lawyers to set the proper priorities for the office. The state's attorney, while the ability is there to go and try cases, she is the leader. She is the lead executive of that office. This current state's attorney's executive leadership has been an unequivocal failure, and it's not because she's done however many jury trials. It's because she does not have the judgment and the insight to lead.
Okay. Retired Judge Joe Romano. Where are you, Your Honor? There he is. Okay. Are you currently practicing law? If so, what types of cases?
So I'm not practicing law. I'm doing legal review work to help me continue to allow Kendall to have shoes on her feet. And so we're looking at all kinds of cases, police misconduct cases, cases involving civil liabilities. So I do a Jackie of all trades, but not practicing law. I'm running for this campaign full time. It needs my full effort.
Okay. We have one more question. I think that's it. Dewan Bailey.
Dwayne.
Look at that now.
Dwayne.
D-U-W is Dwayne?
I see Dwayne. So.
Clearly, I have been on the West Side too, not long enough. All right. Kim, give suggestions on what D-U-W.
It's Dwayne.
When I see D, I thought I say D-U-I. I'll get to the question, Madam President. Kim, give suggestions on what we as members of the community should do to reverse the trends in the juvenile justice system. This is not a softball. This is a hard-nosed question for you.
Certainly. I mean, I think part of it is we have to hold our stakeholders accountable. We have had a juvenile justice system, again, the first in the world here in Cook County, but very few people recognize the significance of what the juvenile justice system here in Cook County does. I literally sat at an editorial board with the current state's attorney who was unfamiliar with the fact that we actually do murder jury trials at juvenile court. And if your leadership of the organization doesn't recognize what happens in juvenile court, certainly the public is not aware because we've not put it out there how significant that work is. So holding stakeholders accountable, I tell people all the time, if you went over to 2245 1100 South Hamilton on any given Monday, it would break your heart. It is like a high school there. There is literally a high school there. But if you go into the galleries and see the faces of the children, and you know what's going to happen to them. We all know about the inevitability of what happens when you're entangled, but we say nothing. So what we can do, one, is engage with organizations that do work that with children who are at risk. I see Jeff McCarter from Free Spirit Media here, who I have to give a shout out to because I'm on their board, who works with at-risk youth, teaching them all aspects of media. There are other non-for-profit organizations that engage in the work with these populations. But what we haven't done when we're asking about the tough questions and the tough cases is ask our current stakeholders, what are they doing for the children in Cook County, and how are they working to prevent violence and stem the school-to-prison pipeline? I believe I'm the only one who's answered that.
Final question, and I could pronounce this name. Josh Kaufman.
Of course.
How's that, Ed? Teach Plus Chicago. This is the last question, Ms. Fox. Will you launch an investigation of the Emanuel administration's alleged cover-up of the McDonald shooting? It's an easy question. There's no reason for it.
Thank you, Josh.
By the way, it's now is it now Teach Minus Chicago?
Right. Josh, there are a lot of questions about what happened in the 400 days between Laquan McDonald's murder and the state's attorney's decision to charge the case. The facts that we know right now is that 400 days passed, nothing was going to happen until that video was ordered to be released. In the 4 days between when Judge Valderrama ordered the video to be released and the actual release of the video, the state's attorney filed charges. The obscurity, the opaqueness of what's happened in those 400 days is cause for concern. It's why instead of just it being the officers and those who are out there that should be under indictment, our whole criminal justice system and the way that we've handled this case cause for us to have extensive review of what happened. I don't know that that's necessarily a criminal investigation by the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, but it's certainly something that all of us as citizens of the county and the city of Chicago should be inquiring about. And I think that is ongoing conversations that need to happen in order for this city to heal and make sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past and ensure justice for children like Laquan.
Good answer. A round of applause.